5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Merkle Media.
Lashback Friday here on Macroaggressions, taking you back to October 2nd, 2021. America's disgusting political orgy with Frank from Quite Frankly. Hey, if you're thinking of converting some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible assets like gold and silver, or maybe even your IRA or 401k, talk to Tony Arterburn, our sponsor over at Wise Wolf. Just go to www.macroaggressions.gold. Now, please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, maybe YouTube for this one. I don't know. Well, it depends on what Frank says. Or you're listening wherever podcasts are served. We certainly do appreciate your amazing support. And speaking of support, we couldn't do this show without the support of our sponsors. Chemical Free Body has been fantastic to us. Tim James has been on the show several times, has explained why he got involved in the health science industry and what he's doing to improve your life. He put me on the Total Gut Detox Bundle package that took 90 days. It was so effective that I had to buy new shorts because my shorts didn't fit anymore. And if you don't believe me, you can check the video. If you go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, I did a short little video showing my results from that program. You can take a look. If you're interested in Chemical Free Body, all the products that they have, take a look. It's a small business out of Oregon. Tim believes and understands the fights that we're in. He's got his own podcast talking about them as well. And if you choose to support this small business on your way out, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself a little bit of money. And also, look, if we're talking about getting ourselves ready physically, then let's get ourselves ready all the way with food and supplies and all of that great stuff. My Patriot Supply has been nice enough to create a landing page for us. You can go check it out through preparewithmacroaggressions.com. They have all kinds of things. We've talked a lot about getting prepared, be that emotionally prepared or however you want to get ready. Just do it. If you don't choose to go through preparewithmacroaggressions.com, that's fine. Just get yourself prepared one way or the other, whether that's buying extra food at the grocery store every time you go, or making a quick trip to Costco and picking up some extra stuff. Whatever you do, don't freak out your family. Just tell them it's for an earthquake or something. So go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. See if there's anything in there that's right for you. And of course, once again, that helps to support the show, and we appreciate that. Well, if you recall a couple episodes ago, I did a show called Plain Favorites. And what I did was I went through a bunch of, I was getting emails from people asking, what are the books that you like? What are the books that kind of got you writing books? And so I started thinking, oh, geez, man, I got a list of my favorites. So why don't I do that? So I put together a list of my favorite books and I talked about it in an episode, but I didn't stop with that. I went on to podcasts and websites and news websites that I go to, activist posts and all that. But if you remember, there was one show that I said, man, if you like my show, you're really going to like Frank's show. So I went out and invited Frank from Quite Frankly. So Frank's here. Hey, Frank, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Charlie? It's so great to be on. Well, I so many people told me about that. It was sent my way, and I just had to reach out to you and just thank you for speaking so complimentary of me. And it was just, thank you so much. It made me blush.
Oh, well, I meant every word of it. There's certain shows out there, and I don't watch everybody's show every time. It's impossible, but there are some shows that I've just gotten myself into a bit of a routine where it's like, I just don't miss them. I try not to miss them. OBDM is one of them. I've been really upfront. And I've also said, listen, it's not for everyone. Like I fully expect that there's a segment of my audience that will think that I'm criminally insane for loving that show, but I don't care because it's wacky and funny and I love it. But your show, quite frankly, you've been doing it for a long time. I'm relatively new to the party. I'm like maybe 2 years in, and I know that that's nothing, but it's something to me. I connected with it. I thought, God, it's one of those shows where I just kind of catch myself nodding in agreement, like, yes, like talking to the screen like a lunatic.
I like that.
So we get it. We're covering similar topics. I like the way you handle it. You show it. You show the serious stuff the respect it deserves. You show the preposterous stuff the disrespect that it deserves. You go after the people that need it. You're nice to the people that don't need to be caught in the crossfire of all of this. And you do it with such a lightheartedness that kind of keeps you hanging in there through all of it. It works for me. I think it'll work for people. So that's why I want everyone. I know that maybe it's not the best strategy for me to have a show and direct everyone to another show, but I really don't care because I want everyone to see what I'm seeing. And so I love it. Like you've been doing it for a while. So you had to have started this when it was not the easiest thing or not the most popular thing to do. Like what drove you into this?
Well, first of all, let me just go back and say, what we're embarking on right now. And I don't, it's however many people get attracted to this medium, new media is really, really, really wonderful. And I'm so excited now because when we were really making our first projects in this area, it was pretty barren. You didn't know what the hell you're cobbling together technology to try to get a stable stream out there. Even internet service providers at home were not even giving you what you really needed to maintain live streaming. At least not in a fashion that we would require for putting on a production. Back in 2007, when people were starting to live stream, where Justin TV just came around, that became Twitch eventually, and Ustream. That's where we did our shows from about 2007 until 2015. Then I moved to YouTube and everywhere else. But around there, this was a time when people were just putting their webcams on and in their kitchen and forgetting that it was on. And you're just peeping in on people that are doing the dishes. Some of them would just say, good night, everybody, and then go to sleep in front of the damn camera. So everything was starting to, we didn't know where the hell it was going. And everything was so primitive. And the consumer grade technology that was available to us was just, it was up to your imagination how you can make it work. Now, oh man, what you can do with a phone in the middle of a city street with a data connection is really remarkable. And I think the best thing that has changed is that the level of interest and the level of disinterest in what is old media, what is corporate, what is Mockingbird. I think that that level of disinterest has been the greatest driver in people coming and seeking out shows like yours, mine, OBDM, everything, everybody that we hang out with. And that's what I love the most. So it's not so much about, you know, usually if you're on one network, you don't want to heap too much praise onto a show that's on another network, but we're all, I feel like we're all just hanging out in the same neighborhood. There's none of that kind of loyalty. And I like it that way because we become a lot more easily attacked if we're all part of one tribe or the other. And we are all basically sharing audiences. And if the new media is ever going to do what it is destined to do, then we all just have to be generous. I mean, obviously, there's just going to be people you don't like. And things that you don't want to, it doesn't vibe with you and you have no interest. But I anytime I find something that I like, I always send people to it, whether it's a product, whether it's another show, whether it's an author. That's just been a focal point of my show as it's almost like a live journal every day. Yeah. And when did it start? Well, 2006 in February, it was February 18th, I think, 2006. I was asked by a friend of mine at my college, Manhattanville College in Purchase, New York, whether or not I wanted a Friday night, Saturday morning, 1 a.m. radio slot on our school radio station. And I had joined the radio club, but I didn't do anything with my license until they said, we have this open slot. You want it? So I asked my brother and my best friend, Anthony and Mike, I said, you guys want to do a 2-hour slot with me at 1 a.m. on a Saturday morning? And they're like, all right, yeah, what the hell are we doing anyway? So we did that. We loved it so much that by that May, we figured out how to link our bedrooms together, me and my brother's bedrooms together, and turn it into this makeshift studio and start live streaming. And we did that just purely audio on Live 365 until the day of the sevens, until July 7th, 2007. We went down to Washington Square Park, and it was this YouTube gathering in New York, and whoever was popular on YouTube at the time, it was a fledgling site still, about 2 or 3 years old. They were hanging out, meeting people, and it was a bright, sunny day. And all of a sudden, we caught a glimpse of somebody walking around with a gigantic backpack on and a hat that had a webcam on their head, and they were streaming live on Justin TV. We're like, what the hell is this? You're streaming live with no wires attached to you? Mm-hmm. So they said, okay, we got to figure this out. We've got to find a way to marry the video with the audio, because, you know, internet radio is cool in itself, but we got to bring this internet radio / some kind of visual component to it. We got to do it. So we started mixing and matching things. That's when we found things like Ustream. And from there, I tell you, man, you know, you described very, very succinctly, in the best way you could, at least, what kind of a tightrope act it is to do a show like mine for as long as I've done it, and to find that balance between knowing who to eviscerate, knowing who to give the benefit of the doubt, knowing who to forgive for their ignorance sometimes, because the people that you hate the most are really the ones holding everybody's strings, and just how to pull people back from certain ledges, how to push people to other ledges, and just walk that line and bring on guests that are controversial that you know are going to split the audience down the middle. Mm-hmm. And how to play that in from every direction. And that only, you can only strike that balance with the 10 or so years that I was able to do the show with absolutely almost nobody watching. And thank God nobody was, because I made a lot of mistakes, and it's all on tape somewhere, but you'll never see it. It's that's the best part about the whole thing. Everybody just needs time. The whole medium needs time, and new media is real, and it's the future. It's the present. So I think it's wonderful that shows like this, collaborations like this happen, because it was a lonely trek from about 2006 until pretty much around 2015, 16.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people were throwing their time into this, and then the technology just got better and better. Yeah. So,
well, what I like about your show is that you bring back some old school television kind of vibes to it, in the sense that it's Monday through Friday. It's at a set time. It's like when we were kids, it's like, oh, I got to get back in order to catch whatever it is, you know,
yeah,
Family Feud or whatever, you know, at a certain time, you know, when it comes on. It's not to say that you can't obviously watch your shows the following day or what. And I wind up doing that most of the time if I can't catch it live, but you've got it scheduled on, like, you know, and then at the end, it's, quite frankly, it's filmed in front of a live studio audience. That whole thing that kind of brings me back to, like, oh yeah, I remember that when I was a kid. So I get this real, it's a familiar vibe to it. And, yeah. and it's got one more thing about it that I get when I go. I do every month, I do a guest spot on Kev Baker's show. He's in Glasgow, Scotland. And I love Kev. He's like a brother that I didn't know. And I describe it to my wife as, I'm just going over to Kev's house for 2 hours to hang out with him, you know, and that's the vibe, right? I feel. And so when I watch your show, I feel like, even though I'm not on the show, when I'm watching it, I feel like I'm just going to go hang out over at Frank's clubhouse, you know, his studio for 2 hours. I mean, I'm just going to go stop by and see what the guys are doing for a little while, watch it as long as I can if I've got something else. It's a very comfortable vibe there. It's very inviting for people. That, I would assume, is a combination of a lot of time, but also, like, that doesn't happen for everyone. I think that's your personalities kind of draws people in. It's very warm. So it all works for me. And where, just real quick, since we're on this topic, where can people consistently find your show? Because I know it's kind of like YouTube is kind of,
Well, that, and you know, I was going to actually expand on that too. There's a couple of things, the reasons why from the beginning, it's like, this has to be every night, 7 o'clock or a certain time, whatever. And number one, it is, yes, familiarity, repetition. And number two, because once time went on, I started realizing that an even more important reason that you have to do stuff like this these days is as a defense mechanism. So right now, I'm in a position right now where all I market myself now is 7 p.m. Eastern time, quite frankly, .tv. And we have the stream and a chat room embedded right there. The entire network afterwards, all the after show stuff, it's all right there. And then, of course, there is about 6 or 7 or 8 other places people could watch at 7 o'clock. And then, of course, a litany of on-demand places. And it's all there on the website, all of your options. But defense mechanism. I mean, we live in a highly censorious, dangerous situation. What's going on here? How we've all been pushed left and right. We've been pushed into our own little echo chambers so that nobody's really making inroads with anybody. And the more that those lines harden and the more that those lines are more defined for everybody, I believe that it becomes a lot harder to get through, because everybody gets radicalized in their own way. They want us to see each other as inhumane. They want us to look at the internet as you used to get those little warnings from grandparents and parents. Don't go to that side of town. Definitely don't go to that side of town after 8 p.m. Get home, you know, whatever. Just don't go over there. You're going to get into trouble. There's a lot of troubled people over there. That's what it is. They've tried to, you know, turn the internet into this like digital ghetto. And I think that if you're doing anything, any kind of a project like this in new media, you've got to try to hedge against the fact that you're not going to be allowed to comfortably build a home anywhere for a long period of time. For me to have ever, even though, yeah, I don't know, I've spent a lot more years off of YouTube than I have been on it. And even right now, I'm serving the last week of the suspension. So it's like to call yourself a YouTube show is really doing yourself a disservice these days. So use the platforms that are available, but it's all part of the culture that we find ourselves mired in. And it's not an encouraging one. Although I guess the fact that they are clamping down is encouraging in its own way. They wouldn't have to do this if we weren't a threat. So
yeah, it's that sort of double-edged sword. Well, listen, they're suppressing us because we're having an effect. It's like, well, that's a great moral victory, but they're still suppressing us. And I don't appreciate that. And so I'm curious about this because we've got this Biden administration, which is, you know, I'll tell you, for as evil as the George W. Bush administration is, I never for a second thought that they didn't know what they were doing. In fact, I felt like they knew exactly what they were doing. They were very devious. They were very calculating. As soon as they got in there, they turned Cheney and those guys loose and they had a plan and they put it in place. So that was terrifying in one way. The Biden administration, though, holy shit, I have never seen this level of incompetence and that is creating for me also a different set of fear, like very different from the Bush administration, but a sense of fear where like we've let a lunatic into the party and we don't know what they're going to do. We don't know if this guy's going to pull his pants down and shit in the middle of the floor in the middle of this party, or whether he's going to, you know, bring in the woke mob and ruin the thing. I mean, we're in a really weird, is this the end of America?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. I wish I was joking. It's definitely what we needed a long time ago was to really reassess our rights to secession and or at least to get everybody. I loved playing the game with Donald Trump as far as when 2016, when he came around. I mean, up until the last moment there, I wasn't really sold on voting for Trump until he was the preeminent, you know, candidate. And I said, okay, well, obviously I'm going to vote for him if I'm going to vote at all, because I'm thinking of two things. I'm thinking of someone who is going to have a better shot at putting in justices. I was thinking about the judiciary. I was thinking about the Supreme Court. Kind of like a wash at that point. They sat on their hands when we needed them the most. But then the other thing I thought was, well if another silver lining with Donald Trump is he'll be somebody to fight the culture war and just at least give the media a really, really hard time.
Yes.
But other than that, there's no hope in the general government. The general government is a highly mutated pile of shit. That has taken away the political autonomy of millions of its employees, all of these agencies that should not exist, most of them autonomous, making they make policy, essentially make law out of nowhere with no authority, or they are actually able to lock up or tie the hands of people who want to enforce good pro-American constitutional law just on account of them not liking it. They can lock things up in process and keep it tied up in litigation and all that stuff. We are completely paralyzed in that level, which is why I say if there's anything that people should be concentrating on right now is who are you voting for on city council? Why don't you run for board of education, for mayor, for the governor? Your governor of your state should be, in a traditional American sense, the most important person in your life. And it still can be if everybody just started concentrating on local government and thumbing their nose to the federal government and start nullifying all this shit. The problem is that they laid the groundwork down for our demise a long time ago with all the way that they spend. In the way that it takes away the autonomy of the state to do what the hell they want, because then all of a sudden they are held up at gunpoint by the federal government. If you don't go along with this mandate or that mandate, you're not getting your billions of dollars of highway funds. You're not getting your Medicare block grant money, whatever the hell it is, whatever kind of schemes you're trying to keep up in state, we've been completely destroyed. And at a long time, and now the money that they've been using to bribe everybody for so long is worth almost nothing. Yeah. Now, that brings us to modern day Joe Biden. Now, I don't really think that you want to talk about autonomy. This guy is not an autonomous person. He's obviously just a puppet. Always was going to be. It was laughable that they would even think that he could be the president as far as being physically able. But then we realized, oh, well, they can make anybody president if this is the way you can put somebody in the White House. You know, you flood the country with tens of millions of votes, just paper bullshit. And then you have a media that just like the proverbial pigeon playing chess. They just shit all over the board and knock things over and they strut around like they won. And they just act as if. So if that's the case, then yeah. Now, here, what we're dealing with now, I think, though, Charlie, is, I mean, he's in a holding pattern. This guy doesn't have any ideas that has not been sent down by the UN or anybody that's outside of the country that's trying to work on the whole world in the same way. But they're a party that is just like, well, while we're here, that's it. I mean, they're not making any decisions on themselves. He's surrounded by lunatics. They're all incompetent. Leftism, collectivism, that is in both parties too. Progressivism in both parties, but especially on the far left, where all they are is consumed by this micromanagement of humanity nonsense. It breeds incompetence. There's no way you can be competent if you think like this. There is no plan that you can put in place that's sustainable. Everything goes against human nature. They're absolutely nut jobs. Now, the big picture stuff they have no part in. The big picture stuff is the gigantic billionaire technocrats, the trillionaires that we don't even know, the bankers, the royals, the Vatican, Nancy Pelosi, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they have nothing to do with on that level. But, you know, while we're here, why not try to, you know, grease our own palms and do whatever the hell? So I think they're waiting for orders to see how the rest of the world continues to shift toward planetary despotism. But if they're going to be able to sit in the White House for 2 to 4 years and have any portion of the Congress in their control, then why not just do whatever the hell you want? So I think it's a lot of just crazy. Some of it is calculating. Others, it's just evil. And then you're dealing with hormonal teenagers with a limitless credit card. What do you expect is going to happen? It's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that guy, you remember that little skit that Jen Psaki participated in with the dude with the fingernails and the hair and the effeminate, you know, thing. I mean, that right there to me kind of encapsulated the Biden administration. Yep. It was cartoonish and stupid. And look, I love a good cartoon, but it wasn't funny. It was well produced. Like you could tell, like they spent a lot of time trying to get this right. It appealed to a mentally ill segment of the population that loves this shit. And it got me thinking, you know, the Biden administration was really made for the COVID operation. There's so many parallels between them. It wasn't really a good operation for Donald Trump. Donald Trump's very direct and very to the point, you know, but the Biden administration and all of their incompetence and insanity and their prioritization of the least important things at the expense of the most important things, it seems like that's such a good fit for the COVID narrative, because the COVID narrative from the start has been filled with, let's focus on the unimportant things at the expense of the real important things. Like, everybody get the paper mask and put it on your face. It's like, you mean the one that comes in the box that on the side says, this doesn't work for all the stuff you think it works for? Yeah, that one. So it's busy work for retards while actual problems are happening all over the globe, like, you know, pull out of Afghanistan and dealing with China and all those really important things. They're like, yeah, we can, let's focus on unity. Let's focus on how many, let's focus on Jen Psaki's press conferences and not on actual scientific. It's like performance art by the kids at your school that nobody wants to see perform. I feel like I'm living in some sort of insane, like, acid trip.
The hallway monitors have taken over the country. The ones who are like, oh, you dork. Oh, man. And yes. Listen, I was no jock or anything like that. I didn't spend time, you know, bullying people, giving them noogies or anything like that. But you just, everybody knows the kind of like, these little micromanaging tyrants that just wish that people took them seriously. They found agency with government. And they've been empowered through because there's just something that's been exposed in them. And as far as the whole Biden and COVID thing, that's almost like a chicken or the egg the question for me. You know, what created the other? I really do believe that there would be no Biden if you said Biden was made for COVID. Well, I think that COVID made Biden.
Yeah.
Because if you, or I mean, at least you could pitch you both could make, ideas.
Yeah, for sure.
Because what you tell me how anybody is going, you're going to sell what happened in 2020 without something like COVID and the, or I should say something like the response to COVID to shut everybody down, to make the reason why people supposedly need to vote from home with these JCPenney mailers, you know, that these ballots that are just pretty much sent home like penny savers. And what's the need to do that if there wasn't something that shut the planet down? So there's no way in hell they would be able to pull off what they did in 2020 without what precipitated this whole thing. We were laughing at the idea that the best thing that they had was Joe Biden, how they were eating each other on the campaign trail. Donald Trump was going to skip back into 4 years. There's no way. So it's one of those things that you're watching the debasement of whatever the hell was even left. And They're trying to make lemonade with it. It's awful.
Yeah. I had Scott Horton on my show a couple of weeks ago talking about Afghanistan, a guy that would know. He wrote a couple of books about it. I'm anti-war. I didn't want us in Afghanistan. I want us out of there as soon as possible and all that good stuff. But Scott made a good point. He said that, you know, the Trump pullout plan had us out in May. And that was, and there was a specific reason to that. That's because once you get anywhere past May, it's fighting season. He kind of jokingly said fighting season in Afghanistan. It warms up. That's when you get a lot of the fights. And so his plan was to be out of there early because of that. The Biden administration came in and said, no, we don't want to inherit Trump's plan or anything Trump related. Let's do it later. Let's do it in August. And he said that was just a tactical blunder. So I'm wondering here, have we like sacrificed strategy, tactical strategy for just, have we politicized it? Because it seems that the reason is, you know, just anything that Trump wanted to do, we can't do it simply because of Trump, even if it was strategically better. So you've got Mark Milley, you know, this fucking guy, General Milley, and his woke mentality. I can't think of two things that don't go together more than military strategy and a woke agenda. What in Sam Hill is going on with this fucking guy and what he is trying to do to this country?
Yeah, well, okay. Well, a couple things. Number one, when it comes to Afghanistan, I'm with you on that too. Obviously, I was a junior in high school when in 2001. So for a few years after that, I mean, my first presidential election that I got to vote in was 2004. Mm-hmm. And I voted for George Bush. And my reasoning was, listen, this war started started on his watch. Let's give him a chance to finish it off. And that didn't work out. But the whole thing there was, even though we came along with that and we saw how it was bona fide bullshit in the very early goings, within the 5-6 years, I think a lot of people were either completely tuned out with what was going on in Afghanistan, or they were realizing why is this happening? What are we doing? Especially Iraq, the civilian death toll in Iraq was it's unconscionable. And you look at these things and you say, okay, well, you break it, you buy it. Whether we're there for good reasons or not, this is only going to be as permanent as writing your name on the shoreline. So the real question is, how do you get out of this area at whenever the hell that time is? How do you get out with little damage as you can during the actual pullout? And then we just have to let time be the healer of all wounds. Because if anybody thought that Afghanistan was going to maintain this faulty Western structure in the middle of that area out there, that region, for much longer than we were going to go, that whether it was Trump or Biden pulling us out of there, I think a lot of people firmly believe it would have just washed right back into this. The real point, the real thing that we're trying to talk about right now is the difference is when you're going to leave, why not prioritize getting everybody out first, right? then military equipment, then the military, and then the last Chinook flies off.
Right.
But it was just like, okay, let's just get the military out, leave the civilians, leave the assets that we've had there, and leave $90 billion. They have an air force now. The Taliban has an air force. It's like they have 75,000 armored vehicles. They have hundreds. It's like, what the hell? And then they have tens of millions of dollars in cash. And then they have $1 trillion a year heroin business. So I don't even know how out of that we are, really, to be honest.
Exactly.
But still, so that's really what it all comes down to. Yeah, we shouldn't have been there. Yes, this now the way that this has been done is a complete waste, and a lot of lives have been lost in vain, it seems. And it wasn't that one plan was going to have lasting positive effects in Afghanistan more than the other. It was just that who's going to have the better, safest way of getting everybody and everything out. And that's where we see that going on down. As far as the politicization. Fuck this. either way, we saw that, what, 2012? Okay, so 4 years before Trump even showed up onto the scene and started running his campaign. You want to talk about politics getting in the way of sound decision making in overseas? 2012, Barack Obama was desperate to get reelected. He had already failed the Black Americans. Black American demographic over here in the U.S. So on the domestic front, they started rolling out all the race war stuff. That's when we got Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. And every 2 years after that, things got worse and worse with Michael Brown and
Tamir Rice.
That's seriously 2012 is when they said we need to start pitting the races against each other real bad, because things were pretty good up until that point, race relation wise. Overseas, the other thing that he needed to get reelected was, all right, well, let's trot out the body of Osama bin Laden and let's get the hell out of Iraq. Well, what they started doing was, at the same time that we, our CIA and Hillary Clinton, everybody else, are starting this Arab Spring stuff and they're destabilizing Syria and Libya and all this stuff, while they're destabilizing all of these countries around Iraq, we quickly pull the plug on all of our assets in Iraq to show that we have pulled out and it's a great victory. Barack Obama is an ender of wars. Vote for me in 2012. But it really all he did was created this void in which all of the terrorists we were training in other countries came on in, and then you got ISIS. And they had to downplay that, so they were the JV team. Michael Flynn was a big part of pointing out this kind of decision-making. So you want to talk about politics reigning over sane decision making just to be able to appease some kind of a public relations angle. This has been going on far beyond Trump. But now that you have the Trump derangement comes into everything, yeah, no, you can't touch anything that has his fingerprints on it, because then that would be a validation of the great evil, you know? And so, yeah, we've been run aground by psychopaths long ago, but it's just getting worse now, because all they have is this war of who is less human than the others.
Yeah. And we're seeing that dehumanization happen too. And sort of like a pivot from that, since we're talking about, you know, botched military decisions, we have the recent submarine deal between the UK, the United States, and Australia, which was supposed to include France. And we said, cut the French out. And that pissed them all off. So it's now this crazy pivot to Australia. And speaking of dehumanization of people, what we've have been seeing in Australia on the COVID front, mind you, not necessarily the military front. Well, I guess it's kind of a blending of the two now that I mention it, but has been the utter destruction of humanity and sanity under the guise of protecting these poor people in Australia from a virus. Now, I know I've got a lot of listeners in Australia, and I'm assuming that you do too, because they are desperate for truth and information, and they have a good sense of humor about it. So they tend to kind of like lighthearted shows. But these people, these amazing people in Australia, they are run by the most insane authoritarians that I have ever seen. Even down to the point where they even wear costumes. Like they wear like what fucking God, it looks like Hugo Boss and the Nazis got together to make the Minister of Health of Australia's uniforms too, because it's like Klaus Schwab is fucking jealous of what they've got going on there.
I know. He dresses like a Mortal Kombat character, that guy.
He totally is. I mean, are you getting communications from people, from listeners in Australia that are talking about what the fuck is going on there? Because I am really scared for those people.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. Especially since, you know, I go live at 7:00 PM and that's probably around 11 AM, 12. So I'm almost like a late morning show to a lot of my viewers out in Australia, and they send in stuff. Well, I mean, I saw the pushback. I saw the breaking of the police line in Australia. One part of it over the weekend. I was happy to see that. But
yeah,
you're talking about scenarios where you are being texted and you are being pinged to make sure that you're home. And this is not, you're not like a murder suspect or anything like that, where you're under house arrest by court order. We're talking about just generalized, you're pinging people's cell phones and making sure that they can respond within 10 or 15 minutes from an approved location. And if you're not in your house, the authorities come get you as if you are a fugitive. And that this is all over a virus. You know, it's the new Al-Qaeda. It's whatever. Every strain is a new offshoot of Al-Qaeda. And the worst thing is that you can't see it. And it could be your grandmother. It could be you. You could be the terrorist. You could be the dirty bomb. You know, it makes me almost nostalgic for November and December of 2001 and all of 2002, with Donald Rumsfeld coming out every couple of days telling us what the new terror level orange. Okay, we're on level yellow and orange, and I'll look over your shoulder. At least we thought we knew what a terrorist looked like back then.
Right.
And, you know, because we saw Muhammad Atta's face all over the place.
Yeah, dead eyes.
I know. That's one of those. You know those faces that if you wake up in the middle of the night, your television's on, you just see somebody's face, and it's like they zoom in on the face. All of a sudden, you start becoming, like, frightened.
Yeah.
You know? You ever have that?
Yeah.
Muhammad Atta's face.
Was that?
Used to be. That's one of those 1:30 a.m. waking up from a light sleep faces that you see on the television that you're just like, shut off the television. Yeah, I have to put ESPN on. I have to feel better. Exactly. You know, I need something light right now. But still, that's going on in Australia. Thing, really, really horrible stuff. Taking people off the beach. This is, it's not even enough. We can't spend too much time feeling bad for Australia because it's coming for us. Everybody's just got, we've got to acknowledge everybody's level of where they are on the timeline, and we got to pray for each other. But none of us have the luxury of sitting back and thinking that we're safe. So it's disturbing on numerous levels.
Yeah. Yeah, we're seeing that authoritarianism. Like, it used to be that America would look at China and they would say, ugh, you know, what you've done there with that, the way you treat your people, it's disrespectful. Now I feel like they've got their clipboard out and a pen and they're taking notes on like, oh, well, I like what you've done here with the social credit system. And I like what you did. Oh, really? You'll just disappear people and put them in camps and harvest their organs and you get how much for that? Oh, okay. Let's make it. Oh,
hey, everybody's walking around with masks on.
Right.
You know, every once in a while, you remember going to an airport or something, and every once in a while you see somebody walking around with a surgical mask on, and you don't think anything of it because you just knew, okay, this person is probably immune compromised, or a doctor has told them, listen, you're going to a large space, just put a mask on and take some vitamin C. Who knows? Maybe they're going through cancer treatment, or and I usually see somebody with a mask on, and I would, you know, I'd say a silent prayer and hope that they feel better from whatever they're going through. Yeah. But that was the American relationship with that kind of, you know, that kind of a sight that you would see. Mm-hmm. But I always knew that, oh, well, in some parts of the world, like China, you have to wear a mask every day because of the smog or because it's something like this. Thousands of people walking around with these masks. I'm like, what a horrible way to live.
I've been there. Yeah, I've seen it. I've been to Shanghai. I've been to Hong Kong a couple times, and I would see the masks. And this was back in 2006 and everything is normal. But I thought, well, they're concerned about smog. At the time, I was living in LA, and I was like, listen, I know about smog. Then you go to Shanghai, and you're like, okay, well, maybe I don't know about smog. They've got the whole different level of it. But you see the masks. You go, I get it. You're riding around on a scooter. You know, you don't want all this. Whatever. It's fine. But the psychological effects of a mask, I don't think we are fully able to quantify what that does to people. You have obviously a young daughter. You know the importance of facial communication, reading facial expressions, that sort of nonverbal communication. Doctors and psychologists will tell you that it's unbelievably important to developmental skills and things like that. But how do you even put how do you measure that, what it's done to us, the psychological trauma of the mask in association with the fear? It's turned us into like a nation of hypochondriacs.
Oh yeah. No, there's no, you can find its equal but there is nothing more dangerous, as we have seen in the last year and a half, than a combination of hypochondria and propaganda.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can find it's equal, because people have done and are willing to do completely inhumane things to themselves, their children, their loved ones, people they used to consider friends, people they used to consider family. They are ready to narc on anyone. Civil liberties is an afterthought. You take hypochondria and propaganda, scare the shit out of people. It's as far as the masks go. I mean, even when I go to a place that they're like, you must wear a mask to walk in here, and we have to go in, I'll put a bandana around my face. You know, Aurora will be in my arms, and I will still, the whole time when she's like looking up at me, like wondering what I'm doing, I'll just do peekaboo stuff just to make believe like I'm having, you know, it's a joke. Yeah. Because I refused since the beginning. I've refused to have her read anything other than an uncovered human face. It's a muzzle. It is psychologically damaging. I was online at this breakfast joint I go to grab coffee, and you know, I'm good friends with them all over there. So for a long time, even during the height of this stuff, I would just either go to the pickup window or I would go in without a mask on, and they wouldn't say anything. They keep the mask on because they're the business owners and they just don't want to get charged like $7,000 fines at a time. But I was in there the other day after a workout, and I went to go grab a coffee. And this is months now since people have not been required to wear masks to go inside. And I'm following this girl in. She is like a couple steps ahead of me, and she parked a couple moments before me. We're going inside, and I'm standing, you know, off her shoulder a little bit, just waiting my turn. And she looks around, and she sees me, and she sees the people behind the counter who are still wearing their masks because they're working. And she pulls her sweater up over her nose and keeps it there. And Mary, my friend behind the counter, is like, oh, miss, you don't need to put the mask on. She didn't even acknowledge. She just didn't acknowledge Mary behind the counter and just kept it over her nose. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, this is that. And she walked out a couple seconds later with her coffee, and the woman behind the counter was just like, I don't know. We have to wear it just because whatever, but I'm trying to tell them they don't have to wear it. I said, Mary, that's the real price. What you just saw, that's damage that's not getting reversed. That's the price we paid right there. That person is never going to be complete again. And the horrible thing about it, you want to talk about the psychological warfare aspect of this. The worst part about it is they have been sold that is a responsible thing to do to save lives and to return us to some part of normalcy. If you have done that, you've acted under that level of fear to try to bring some kind of sense of normalcy back, you're already dead. If you're that afraid of death, you're already dead. You're never living the life that you had before. That was a life that was comfortable. Everybody has their anxieties. Everybody has their problems. Everybody has their issues. But at least 3 years ago, we were comfortable with that level of discomfort. You know, we have to do all that. That's the worst part. That's the worst price that's been paid. People think that they've saved lives, but they've really just committed suicide in ways that they can't even estimate at this point, if ever.
Yeah. They've normalized this. One thing that has been, I think, especially frustrating for me is that because of the inordinate amount of downtime that people had during 2020 with really nothing to do and maybe a sense of, oh, I don't really know how I can help out. I'm not a virologist. I'm not a doctor. They were empowered by the media and by the government to become the authoritarians that they had always desired to be, but were in the closet about this. They had come out and now become the mask Karens or the people calling the police on too many cars in the neighbor's driveway for Thanksgiving and things like that. It gave purpose to people with no purpose in their lives. And it gave a mission to somebody that has nothing actually happening. And it deputized them to go out on the streets and stick their nose in other people's business. And that to me is extremely dangerous for someone to do. Like, we normalized over the course of 18 months, we have, not us, of course, but society has tried very hard, and I would argue that they have kind of done this, normalized walking up to a perfect stranger and asking them if they've been injected with something. Like, that should rightly get you punched out in the real world. And yet here we are arguing with some asshole at a door for a retail store before you can or can't go in to try and tell this guy whether or not you've allowed, what your medical history is. Get the fuck out of here whose business is this? And yet now we've got to the point where it's like, you're not going to tell the guy? Why aren't you going to tell? Why don't you just, if it's people like you that are keeping this pandemic going along, it's like, what are you talking about, man?
Oh, you said that's a great way of putting it, the deputizing of people. I was in CVS maybe about four or five months ago. I forgot how long ago it was. It might have been last winter. And I'm sitting there with it was a Saturday afternoon. I had to go grab a box of cat litter. And I was getting the cat litter, standing there online, and I had my mask on, but I had pulled it down right below my nose because I figure if I'm going to stand here like a fucking idiot, then I'm going to inhale through my nose and exhale through my mouth, and that's what I'm willing to compromise on. I need to breathe real air, free air. I have to do that. Well, I can't tell you over the last year how many people I have seen notice me, you know, exposing a nostril and going to tell on me. I know the tattler, I know the squealers too. I see them, they look at me like with the side look because they're completely non-confrontational weasels. And then they go squirrel away and they'll just be like, and I'll see them like do things like this. He said, no, he's pointing to their nose and stuff like that. And when the people, most people don't want to even get involved.
Right.
Just Saturday, I went to go pick up some film that we developed for my daughter's one year birthday party. And we just wanted to put up some film that we developed about from all the last year of her being alive. And I'm in there. I didn't know that CVS reinstituted the mask mandate in Connecticut. I was in Greenwich, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And So I said, I don't give a shit. I'm not putting it on. So I went in. I'm the only one without a mask on. Nobody's saying anything. There's one guy behind the counter, and I can tell he doesn't want to do it. He just, you know, very meekly, as he's looking for my, my photos, sir, do you have a mask? I said, what? He said, do you have a mask? I went, no. So listen, I'm almost out of your hair. Let's just get this. Just give me the pictures. I'll be out of here in a second. But months ago, when I knew that the mask mandate was up there, this one woman, she's telling on me. I can see it. And then she turns around when she's getting no justice that she's looking for. She turns around before she leaves. And because I have a nostril exposed, she looked at me. She goes, you jackass. And then she just storms out. But I got a good, nice, loud, robust, go fuck yourselves. And as she's walking out, just boom, boom, again. I almost lost my mind, Charlie. I almost lost my mind. And you, as you said, for people to feel comfortable going up to a perfect stranger and not only asking them their medical history. And if you deny it, then of course that must mean that you didn't get it. And then we have to, you know, it's the invasion of the body snatchers. But the fact that you're around strangers, that a couple of years ago, and in me, it's always going to be the same. I can walk into a room and I can leave with friends anytime. And I always try to make friends with people. And I want to have good interpersonal experiences with people. But the fact that so many people have now taken on this mindset of the people around you are not potential friends. In fact, they're not, they may not even be human. They may just be a political agent or what's motivating them to not be exactly like me. The fact that that crazy, crazy, fried, bugged out Karen of a bitch on the line at CVS, there was never any chance for her to see me as anything but a jackass in her life. That is all we would ever be. Ships passing in the night, hurling insults at each other because of how I was wearing a fucking muzzle is so, that was so upsetting. As much as I wish her the worst, and I don't give a shit about her, it was so upsetting as a macrocosm kind of a thing. If we're going to, bringing the macro for you, as a macrocosm, it was, because you extrapolate that out to everything you're saying right there. It's a gut punch. It really is. You know, 2019 is so close. We can almost touch it with our fingertips, but we'll never grab it again. You know?
Yeah. Fuck. It's frustrating. Well, I have to say, you did it wrong with the CVS. All you really needed to do was go to the San Francisco CVS and you could just walk out with whatever the fuck you want, because apparently that it's free there, right?
It's true. So
you could thank Chesa Bowden for that, right? He's gone in there and said, make America Marxist again and do all that stuff. And look, I appreciate the time that we have with you. I know you've got to run. So once again, where can people find you? What's the best way for them to connect with you and your work?
Well, Charlie, thank you so much for bringing me on. I would love to do this again. I'd love to have you on my show. Let's keep doing this because it's fun. This time of day is usually pretty. I've got some flexibility here, so let's just do some stuff. But thank you so much, and keep doing the great work that you do. And if anybody's interested in watching my show at night, it's at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and you can find it at quitefrankly.tv. And yeah, as you said in the beginning, where it's almost like hanging out. Well, I was raised by parents who were very, very keen on showing me the way things used to be. And I was always so enamored by that level of comfort that people had with the Johnny Carson show, with people mm-hmm. like Don Rickles and Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, the Dean Martin roasts and all that. It seemed like everybody in this country at a certain time in our history, especially a certain time in media history, had a bunch of extended uncles and cousins and aunts that they could tune into every night, and they can just get a little something, variety shows, you know, good family entertainment and all that, and that familiarity. So I wanted to have a classic radio feel and a living room kind of environment. And then also there's spackled in there as well as, kids, you got to get out of here. I got to talk to your parents about something.
Right.
I mean, it's not always family entertainment, but I try to put those grocery store dividers in between the segments.
And yes, the ones that you've hand sanitized many times, of course, right? Before, right.
Less of caring. Course. And lest you be called a jackass
by some random weirdo at CVS, which is, well, look, the show works for me. You know, it just, it's hard. You know, if someone said, why does it work for you? And you go, well, it's Frank for one, you know, and look, I told you people you'd love him. I told you people you'd love him. He's the best. Go check out. Go to quitefrankly.tv. You get everything that you need there. Oh, by the way, my new book is out, Hypocrisy. Frank, I'll send you a copy of it. It is called Surviving in a World of Cultural Double Standards. I go after the woke mob. I go after the COVID retards. I go after the government, the media. You know, it's just a blast. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested, the book is now available on Amazon, or I make the offer as well. If you don't like Amazon, and I totally get that too, because I have my problems with them, you can buy the digital version of the book directly from me. Go to theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. There is a PayPal option there. If you donate $10, I'll send you the new book in digital format. If you donate $15 or more, I'll send you the new book plus The Octopus of Global Control as well. I can't send you the second book, Controlled Demolition, because I wrote it with Jeff Berwick, and so I don't have the authority to just hand that out.
How many books have you written, Charlie?
This is the third one. Yeah,
I want to write so badly. I have so many notes. I have even just for like video shorts and everything. I have so many notes, and I want to do it so badly. I'm jealous of people like you. It's so cozy to publish a book.
I'll talk to you about it sometime off air, and I'll tell you what, it's easier than you think. If I found a trick that made it seem less like a big, massive project and more like you're writing just a bunch of individual stories. So that's how I did it. I'm not a traditional writer. I don't have a fine arts degree or 17th century women's lit master's degree or anything like that. I'm just a moron.
It's East Asian lesbian interpretive dance. Nothing like that. No.
Nope. I just know how I feel, and then I type it in, and that becomes the book. So I think the world needs a quite frankly book. Believe me, it would be a coffee table book probably, even on top of that.
I'd love it.
Yeah. Well, everyone, if you like this show, please take the additional step of sharing it with your friends and family. I'll put the links to Frank's show in the description. Frank, thank you so much. You're the best, and everybody, we will talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir. And thank you to all of the wonderful audience members of this wonderful Macro Aggressions show. You guys have been fantastic to me.
Thanks, Frank. We'll talk to everybody soon.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.
America's social casino. Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.